Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. Happy New Year.
Wake up, Hollywood.
Dave, you brought your radio voice with you.
I dusted it off and brought it on in.
You can turn that down to like a six.
Okay, right around here.
How was your holiday?
It was good, man.
Did you do anything crazy?
No. Actually, a lot of non-crazy, but good, like quality time with family and friends.
You sound very disinterested that you've been doing that. You're like, well, I spent a lot of time with my family and friends.
It was kind of like the holiday you want, because I haven't seen the family for a while. I've told you before the show, I got to meet a new nephew of mine, so I like got to see the existing family and then got to welcome another one into the tribe.
Get to see some newbies.
Yeah.
That's a good feeling.
Yeah.
Did you get any lumps of coal under the tree?
No.
You're like, no.
That was good this year,
buddy. Good.
I defended.
I always feel like I'm going to get a bunch of lumps of coal.
You're just going down like wincing.
It's like, wait a minute. You've been on the naughty list for 35 years. 36 years.
When Santa hands you coal, you have a barbecue.
I like that.
There we go.
That's good. You're like a philosopher.
Yeah.
Thank you for filling in for Eddie, by the way.
My pleasure, man. Anytime.
Dude, how do you like the new digs?
This is great, dude.
It's so much better than where we were about a year ago, right?
Yeah.
We've been moving up like the Jeffersons.
Yeah, you've been stepping it up. The quality keeps going
We're
up.
Trying. We're trying.
Yeah. What did you do? I haven't asked you yet about your holiday.
I went to New Orleans for New Year's Eve.
Okay.
That was the shit.
Yeah, I saw some pictures.
Dude, I think I'm going to retire there. I swear to God, there's like music in the streets. There's great food everywhere. People are cool. There's art everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's not too expensive. It's just like, man, this is the shit. I think I would sell everything I got, move there when I'm like 50 or 60.
Mm-hmm.
Call it a day.
Just be ready to go.
It's a great city. We went on like haunted history tours. Mm-hmm. We got our fortunes read. I took my brother out there. He hadn't been there since he was like a college kid. Mm-hmm. So showed him like some great restaurants. It was awesome. Fireworks.
Nice. Did you do New Year's there as well?
Yeah. I always do New Year's. For the last like 4 or 5 years, Bonnie and I have been doing New Year's there. Mm-hmm. And it's just fun, man. It's just like people in the South, they just get it on a different level.
Yeah.
So that's been like our spot. I went 1 year to Disney World, and I was like, I'm never doing that again.
Yeah.
That was like kids and adults times infinity.
Yeah.
Way too many people, way not enough
I'm
rides.
I'm driving a sea of
dude,
fanny
I was about
packs
to shoot and myself. I was like, dude, this is not a happy new year at all. This is a very small world after all.
And it's not one I want to be part of.
Not one I want to be.
Got to get a rocket out of Tomorrowland and blast over to California Adventure.
So what did you do in Utah? Was it cold? It must have been cold.
It was, man. It was really cold. It was nice the first day because I got in like really late, woke up, and there was snow coming down.
Oh, you're like, oh, my God.
I was looking out the window. I was like, oh,
Christmas story.
A long time. Yeah. Yeah. So we had fat, chunky snowflakes coming down. It was great. I got to play in the snow with my niece and my nephew. It was great.
You had a snowball fight. I know
you. Of course.
Dude, you fight dirty.
Oh, yeah.
You ain't clean
with some
that
ice and some rocks in the middle and then pretend you didn't know.
You're like, oh, my God, little Timmy, I'm sorry. Yeah. No. There's a rake in there.
Day two, though. Day two, we take them sledding, and that's going to be like the outdoor winter extravaganza day. We go to this park where there's great sledding and we get out and the wind like totally picks up that day. And with the wind, there it is. It was freezing cold. And like kids' sleds were like, they wouldn't hold on to them for like 1 second and the wind would take like the lighter plastic sleds.
Really?
And they're blowing off into the street and these cars were swerving around. So like,
dude, that's some dangerous shit.
And it was freezing cold. And we went downtown that night, and we're just looking at each other, and like, there's not enough hot chocolate in the world to make this
You're
work.
You're like, this so. Is, I don't know why people live like this.
Yeah.
There's a Whenever whole I see that on TV, I'm like, man, how do you do that? How do you do that? All that snow every day. You come outside and you're like,
it's great, but the magic wears off once it starts melting and it gets, you know.
I'm going to Utah in a week to play Sundance.
That's right, dude.
And dude, I always experience it like when I'm raking the windshield.
Yeah,
that ain't cool. It's like, dude, you have to keep the car on for 10 minutes just for it to warm up. I'm like, dude, this is a lot of extra time in my day that is doing things I don't want to do.
There's so much planning. You know, in one way, it makes you a little bit more aware of, like, planet Earth.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And you know, there are organisms who have to work in it. You've got to, like, plan all these different steps, but then in the back of your mind, you're like, back in L.A.
So I'm sure you're bragging. Like, you're like, whoa, we don't really deal with this shit in L.A.
Yeah.
It's like 80 degrees over there in the winter.
Yeah, yeah.
And your family's just like, we hate you.
We hate you.
We hate you.
I'm stowing away.
So were there any things that you kind of took for granted when you were a kid with like snow plowing or?
Yeah. Snow plowing. One thing, like growing up, I skied, but I didn't ski very much. But now I look back, I'm like, I was 20 minutes away from like enjoying that all the time.
Every person I know from Utah, we both know a guy named Braden.
Yep.
I'm like, dude, why do you guys not snowboard like all the time? I go there to, like, that's my one trip where I'm like, I'm excited to go do some snow activities.
Yeah.
And everybody from Utah is like, no, we don't do that.
Yeah.
We don't do that here. Yeah. I'm like, dude, you live in the snow.
Yeah.
Why would you not play in the snow?
Mm-hmm.
No. You'd rather just like rake the ice off your windshields.
Yeah, I'm scraping the windshield over here, man.
It's okay. It's all right, dude. I think our special guest for the evening has arrived.
Nice.
Mr. David Ryan Harris.
That's actually what you said. Like, look
at our studio audience just loved you.
Oh, yeah.
They, you guys are too kind. You're too kind.
So we have a show of David's tonight. I love it. Mr. David Jensen and David Ryan Harris. I'm going to call you Dave.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to call you David.
Fantastic.
Okay, and for the listening audience,
exactly.
I'm Dave. I'll be Dave for the remainder of this.
I'm going to be David.
Yeah. You got some,
don't switch on me.
You've
guys.
Got some stereo.
You guys, I can see you.
Are you okay with Dave?
I am. I'll answer to any derivation.
Really?
Yeah.
I hate when I introduce myself as David and they're like, hey, I want you guys to meet my buddy Dave.
And you're like, no.
That's not what I said.
That's not what I said.
I prefer David. Uh-huh. I'm same way, but I'm fine with all of them.
Right, I got you.
You prefer David?
I prefer David. It depends. Like, there's some people that call me Dave, and I don't even realize that they just call me Dave. But some people say it, and I instantly bristle.
That's bullshit. Yeah. I'm sure you're like, motherfucker, you just said Dave.
Why don't, for the rest of the show, I'll be Griffin.
I'm going to call you Jacques.
All right. Griff. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So, David.
Yes.
I've been waiting to have you on this show.
I've been waiting.
That's right. No, because it's like, this show is all about showcasing great artists. You are one of the greatest artists I know. Like, seriously. Like, I'm going to dry hump his leg a little bit.
That's all right.
Artistically, not metaphorically speaking.
And for the listening audience,
well,
he's rounding second.
It's weird for the listening audience because you mean visual artists, right? And they're not going to see any of what I'm about to draw.
Well, maybe. You don't know. The night is young. Anything can happen.
All right. It's a different kind of radio.
No, but this is why I wanted to do this show, is to showcase artists like yourself. And you were the first artist, actually, was wanting to be on this show. But I was like, I got to build this thing till we have enough listeners where it's like, yo, this guy needs to be on, and you are going to love him. Every listener out there is going to eat you up. I can't wait to get to your performances. But let's talk about how you got into music. Tell us how you got bit by the bug.
Before we do that, I just want you to know I would have come early on in the game.
Oh,
I would have come
early,
this? I would have brought at least my B game,
dude. Your B game is better than most A games, so I appreciate that.
I got bit by the bug. There's just, you know, both of my parents are huge music fans. My mom was really into like Chicago blues and like sort of typical AM 70s radio, Doobie Brothers, and you know, Stevie Wonder, and you know.
Who is this Stevie Wonder guy? He's got a snazzy name.
Yeah.
I'm gonna I'll put some stuff on a USB drive for you.
Perfect. That'd be great.
or possibly a cassette tape.
8-track. I prefer 8-track.
So the only format to last.
She loved music and always kind of sang kind of under her breath. And my dad was like a big jazz guy. So I preferred riding in the car with my mom because she listened to music that I could understand. And my dad listened to like bebop, and I was like, this music sounds like fighting.
This is inscrutable.
Yeah. Hey, Dad, when is any part of this song going to repeat?
Yeah. He's like, that's the cool thing, man. It doesn't.
Yeah.
What part's the catchy part?
Yeah, yeah. When do I start singing? Dad, how old is it? How old do I have to be to start doing heroin?
He's like 14.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least 14.
Yeah, at least. 13 and a half. He's like, wait a minute,
are you playing saxophone?
Yeah. Exactly. So, it's always music around, and I was told that I sang since I could talk. My grandmother tells a story about me being on a bus, and I was singing some nursery rhyme at the top of my lungs, and she was like, shh, shh.
And you're like, no.
And I was like, I want these people to know Three Blind Mice.
You're like, this is the song I know. I didn't write it, but here it goes.
I want you to hear it.
For the listening audience, their tails were just cut off with a carving knife.
Yes. Yet another morbid nursery rhyme.
Yeah.
So when did you learn how to play guitar and all that? You had to play some instrument, like clarinet or something. Recorder.
I'm gonna tell you. Like, I don't know if you got like on your soundboard over there something that's a very sad kind of like, I'll start telling the story and you can find an appropriate. Oh my god!
Did I just read your mind? Was that synchronicity?
That is it. Okay, get ready for that. So really, I wanted to play flute when I was a kid, but the music teacher, told me that my lips were too big.
That's some bullshit, yeah. Dude.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow. That was your cue, man. You're supposed to use the thing.
Wait, hold on. It's my first day.
Yeah.
So then I went. I played viola, and neither one of them are very like cool instruments, really. And I did it. I did it for a while, and then I just kind of went back to just singing. And then about 16, I wanted to. I just wanted to be able to write songs, and it was either keyboards or guitar, and I felt like. Keyboard players always had to stay stationary or play a stupid guitar, which I didn't want to do. So it was guitar. And really, you know, some people are guitar, like, you know, John Mayer, I think he is a guitar player that sings. Right. I'm a singer that plays guitar. Like singing is kind of second nature to me. And so I only feel like I only play guitar well enough to get my song idea across.
And you play it more than well, that's for sure.
Well, yeah. It's a never ending quest.
So when you saw the guitar, was it a magical experience? You're like, there he is. She will be mine.
Yes, I did. That is exactly what happened, and that was the sound of pee in my pants. You know, guitar's just a cool. It's a cool instrument, man.
Sweet.
Yeah. You know, like
you're like, this one will get me chicks. This one looks like it's going to be heavy with a lot of gear.
Yeah. Dudes that front bands play guitar.
That's true. That's
dudes
true.
That front band and maybe bass. Like bass is actually my favorite instrument, but I can't play and sing at the
same
time.
It's a lot trickier. It's a lot trickier. Yeah. More rhythm.
It's you got to hold it down.
It's work and I don't want to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gives you more respect for like Sting and like Paul McCartney. It's like, dude.
Paul McCartney more. I mean, no disrespect to Sting. Sting is his songwriting, but his bass lines are kind
Sting's one of our listeners, just so you know.
he's like, and another thing.
Just so you know, Sting is our listener. His bass lines are kind of simple. Like, Paul McCartney plays like some kind of intricate shit. Yeah. Like Geddy Lee. I don't know. How do you do that and sing at the same time?
I agree. And then the drummers?
Yeah.
Excuse me. Like Don Henley? That guy trips me out. It's like, wait, dude, you're playing some serious groove, and then you're singing this gut-wrenching stuff. It's
or of all, the best of all time, Levon Helm. Oh. Levon Helm. In terms of drummer, singers, like, that's unbelievable.
Dude, unbelievable. Any cat that plays drums and sings, I'm like, dude, you are my hero. Yeah. I don't know how you do it. It's crazy.
How about the dude from Night Ranger? The same.
It's all right. It's not the same.
All right. Well, I'm just saying he played drums and sang. And
it's not the money. Right. Not the money.
Did you start taking classes when you started? I was curious, like, was it more of a coming up knowing that you wanted to songwrite? Was it you saying guitar or piano, or did you have the opportunity to like get into any class or program coming
up? I never took a class. Actually, bass was my first. That was the first instrument that my parents bought me, and I have this thing about me to this day. I would like to take things apart because I need to know how they work.
You took apart the bass that your parents gave you?
Like, I think I got it for Christmas. By New Year's Eve, shit was destroyed.
Your parents were like, David, what are you...
God damn it!
That's exactly what they said. That's exactly what they said. And I could just never kind of get it back together. So I didn't have an instrument for a while, and eventually I got a guitar. But it was just like learning songs off of records. Didn't really take lessons. Like the first time I probably opened, you know, any kind of book, because my mom loved like 70s radio. Steely Dan was like really big in my house, and
dude, you were raised with Steely Dan. That's your mom is cool, man. She listened to some cool shit.
She definitely listened to some cool shit. But I knew it was like incredibly musical. So, like, so for me, I would go to the guitar store and I would buy these books, and they would have all these chords in them, but the chords didn't have any relation to anything. So I was like, all right, well, there's an E flat 11 chord. I don't know how does that apply. How does that apply to anything? But then the Steely Dan chords, because I knew the songs, I could see how these crazy chords fit in the context of a song. Yeah. So I would do that from time to time, like songs that I knew. I was like, oh, I want to, you know, figure out how to...
And how old were you when you picked up guitar?
16.
Okay. So you're like pre-puberty, around that area?
Yeah.
Like, pre-puberty, it's 16.
Well, puberty, you're like you're like in the middle. It depends. It's 15 to 17.
So yeah, I don't
like,
know how I'll convince you to have me be underdeveloped at 16. No, I was fully pubescent.
I'm 33 and I'm still waiting.
Dream big.
Still in Times Square just waiting for both balls to drop.
Yeah.
Happy 2015, everybody.
Well, let's get right to one of your songs, because, dude, you blow me away every time you play something. So what are you going to play us first?
I'm going to play you a song. I don't want to give a disclaimer because I hate when people give a disclaimer, but literally a week ago I had no voice at all. I had laryngitis for like 4 or 5 days.
This is a great setup for you to just blow people's minds with your voice, right?
Oh, my God, he said he had laryngitis. So I kind of don't know what's going to come out. I'm going to do the song called Shelter that I wrote with Derek Trucks and his wife, Susan Tedeschi, or... Susan Tedeschi and her husband, Derek Trucks.
Yeah, she's like, what did he say?
Yeah. Sorry, Sue. Yeah, it's about 4 minutes long. They made their promises and then they walked away. Fair weather friends, be gone, be gone. My strength I find in you, the one who loves and can't be moved. In your arms I find new gold to soldier on. You are my prayer in times of trouble. I'll be your answer when you call me. I'll shelter you, shelter me. Wake up and keep dreaming. Born to fly. When your heart is heavy like a stone, I'll lift your burden high so we can cross the water deep and wide. Lay beside me now and rest your weary bones. You are my bread in times of trouble. I'll be your answer when you call me. I'll shelter you. Show me how an action speaks louder than a word. Times of trouble. I'll be your answer when you
I'll shelter you, shelter me.
Holy shit.
Where did all these people come from?
Oh my God, it's a triple audience clap.
All the way.
Oh, it's quadruple. Silence. Yeah. Dude, seriously, for anybody that heard you just say that you had laryngitis before, they're just like, oh my God, I think this is Black Jesus.
How do I get laryngitis?
They're like, where do I get this? Where's this laryngitis? How do I catch it?
Dude, first of all, slamming tune, slamming vocals, slamming guitar playing. It's just, man, every time I hear you play, it's just like, holy shit, man, what am I doing with my life? Maybe I should be an accountant.
Oh, don't do that. Don't do that.
So, like, you've been, I know you've had record deals, you were in different bands, you played with some of the biggest names out there, you've co-written songs. Tell us, after you came out of puberty, you started a band. Did you go to music school? What did you do?
Post-pubescent stages.
Man. I want the whole life story. Yeah.
I was in this quote-unquote band called The New Breed, and I say band because they weren't really, like, we didn't, like, have rehearsal or really, like, there were just a couple guys that played, but we loved Prince.
Dude.
A lot. And, like, a lot of sort of UK stuff, like, this band called Japan was really big for me, like, Susie and the Banshees.
I love
like
Susie and
the Cure and the Smiths, we loved. So we formed this band, but I didn't get the experience of like playing in a room with a bunch of dudes until I graduated from high school, and I put the kind of a punk band together with four friends of mine from Atlanta called Follow For Now, and it was like we weren't trying to do a black rock band, it just so happened it was like, oh, well, these dudes listen to the same thing that I listened to, so it was like, you know, half Funkadelic and then half Slayer and, you know, Bad Brains and, you know, this is an
eclectic mix.
Yeah, pretty eclectic mix, and we were all too young and dumb to know that you're not supposed to put those things together.
Oh, bullshit. That's what makes the greatest bands and sounds out there.
Well, it was great. For me, it was like we were completely fearless because we literally had no idea that you're not just like, well, this is what I listen to, so why can't I put this, you know, this reggae this thing? Yes.
Why not?
And so that was my first experience with like playing with dudes, and, you know, we got a record deal and did some touring, toured with like Pearl Jam when 10 came out.
Holy shit.
Wow.
Which was great.
On the 10 tour too. Yeah. Like, that's the,
and,
like, the,
by the way, my co-host Eddie, who's not here, is a diehard Pearl Jam fan. So he just missed a little pearl, little pearl there.
Yeah. I could touch him with a hand that has held Eddie. Yeah, it was a great time. Like, they were playing like clubs and small theaters at the time. So their star was definitely on the rise. So yeah, did that, and then, you know, I kind of felt like I felt like I was doing all the
work. You're like, I'm carrying these guys.
I mean, I just
want
to
say it.
I really wanted to, like, and to this day, like, I love the idea of like there being a musical democracy where it's you know, five dudes in a group a and everybody. Like, you bring in a song, and maybe you can sing it. I don't care.
Then this
other guy does this thing, and then I just felt like I was always bringing in songs, and, like, I don't know.
You're just like, I don't want to do this anymore.
I kind of don't want to do this anymore, and so I left the band, and I wrote and co-produced some songs for this girl, Dion Ferris, who was in Arrested Development. We had this really big song. I know what you're doing, baby. I know you're down my nine. So that was my first, like, kind of, like, sideman thing. Toured with her for a bit, and then I got a deal in Columbia with this guy, Brendan O'Brien, who produced, like, Rage and Stuntable Pilots.
He's a great, he's a big producer,
He's very, super talented and, you know, very prolific, and he had this label, and it was myself and Michael Penn and this other band, whose name I can't remember, but, you know, a few artists, and he let me, you know, go in this, like, I was thinking, all right, well, Brendan's going to produce my record. He's like, no, you know what you're doing. You produce it, and I'll mix it.
Wow.
And so I was a little bummed, but a little bit like, oh,
that's a vote of confidence.
That's a great, great vote of confidence. There was one caveat. He was like, we were recording the 2-inch. So he was like, I'm only doing, like, one reel of tape. So if it's got more than 24 tracks, I'm not mixing it. We're not slaving to machines. So, you know, I had all these ideas of, you know, at the time, 24 tracks seemed incredibly limiting.
Right.
Forgot that the Beatles did incredible shit on four. Yeah. But I was like, you, what do you mean? I can't do, I can't do, you know, 48 tracks and we have.
What about my 16-piece horn section?
I guess I'll cancel my bassoon squadron.
Exactly. Way to crush dreams. You make records and crush dreams. So, you know, I put this record out that was, once again, incredibly eclectic, and Columbia didn't really know what to do with it. You know, I guess I'll sort of throw him a bone. It was like, well, if we go with this one song, then there's no other song like that song on this record, and we just don't know what to do with it. So I left that band. Is this – am I supposed to keep going?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
This is great.
You're good. You're good. You're good. Don't worry.
Yeah. And so I was born –
we'll cut you off.
Born by the it was the best of times. It was the worst of times. Brendan decided he didn't want to be a label head, and I decided I didn't want to do that thing anymore. So I left, and I had never really done acoustic, like solo stuff. I started off with electric, which a lot of guys kind of go the other way around. And so I was kind of forced to figure out.
Dave goes both ways.
Oh.
Sorry.
Dang.
Sorry, go ahead. David's like, you guys are seriously immature.
I like it. I like it. I like it. Can I come? When's the next show? Can I come back?
Yeah. You can come back
it's
next
part
week.
Of our report. Yeah.
Awesome.
That will be the fart episode.
All right. So, so I started kind of doing the, you know, acoustic thing and just trying to figure out how I could play shows and, you know.
Is this when you did the Atlanta EP? Is that right around
soon
the time?
Soon thereafter. We're getting okay. Really close.
All right. All right.
Then I decided that my life was a wreck and I should quit drinking. So then I was sober for a while, for like 3.5 years. And somewhere in the middle of that, I met, reconnected with a friend of mine, Johnny Colt, who had been the bass player in Black Crowes. And like we were all friends. We rehearsed up the hall from each other. So, you know, I'd known each other. We'd known each other for years. But Johnny had just left the Crowes and I wasn't sure what I was going to do. He wasn't sure what he was going to do. And we were both sober at the time. And so we just started, like, doing stuff on our computer. And we did, we made this song that the number one PD in the country at the time, this woman, Leslie Fram, who I think now works at CMT, but she was the number one PD in the country. She heard the song, and we didn't have a deal. She was like, I like this song. I'm going to start playing it. So she started playing it, and then labels came calling, and we got signed to... Lars Ulrich from Metallica had an imprint through Elektra. So Lars signed us. If you guys are wondering, I'm sniffing because there's mounds of cocaine everywhere. cocaine everywhere. I can hardly see the microphone.
Mouse tails and coke everywhere.
So we put this one record out called Tragic Show. Brendan came back and produced it. I think those of you out in Radio Land, if you like rock music, this was a fantastic record. It's called Tragic Show. A band's called Brand New Immortals. Great record. Didn't get his due. And then Lars decided he didn't want to be a record head anymore. He wanted to go back to playing drums in Metallica.
Poorly.
Yeah.
And then...
Poorly's correct.
I had met John Mayer, you know, maybe a couple years prior to that, maybe in like 99. And we, you know, kind of palled around and did acoustic shows and played Eddie's Attic. There's... and, you know, various little listening rooms around Atlanta. So we became friends, and then he got a deal and went off and kind of did his thing. And Brand New Immortals broke up. I moved to L.A. I ran into John. He's like, hey, man, what's going on? If you ever want to come out and just, you know, hang out on the bus and play guitar, there's always a bunk for you. So I was like, all right, cool.
That's awesome.
So I started, did that, and I was supposed to just kind of hang out for a little bit, and I ended up there for like 9 years. It was like, it's like you're supposed to help somebody move, but then you actually move into their apartment.
But that's actually like my favorite lineup of his band. I mean, I've seen so many different lineups that he's played with. And like, dude, when you were in the band, like hearing this guy singing background vocals with John, it's like, dude, I mean, that you couldn't ask for a better singer and guitarist and to be in that, you know, ensemble. Like,
Our voices mesh really well together. But I also think that part of the thing that was great was... I think when you go see a band and you feel like there's some kind of inside joke going on between those guys, you can just see it in their eyes. You can just look at each other and there's a little smile. Like the iteration of the band with myself and JJ Johnson,
who's playing with Derek Trucks now.
Playing with Derek Trucks now. Like, you know, JJ was my, you know, he's like my best friend. So to be on stage with your best friend, you know, it's just like, I think people could just, they could see and sense that. And I think it informed the music and the musicality. So that was a great thing. I did that for 9 years. And then I decided that I'm probably not ever going to get promoted to John Mayer. Like, they're not going to call me in the office one day and be like, you know what, Dave, you've been here. You've been here 9 years. You're a great company man.
Yeah.
You've put in your time. Close your eyes. Mm-hmm. We're going to put this hat on you. You are now John Mayer.
You're the lone wolf.
Yeah.
There you go.
And I got a little lazy, and I realized that a lot of my fan base, like if you said my name, they were like, oh, yeah, I know David Ryan Harris. He played guitar for John Mayer. Where I'd had this career, where I'd had three record deals.
Like, that's not true. You know, I had a life before it.
It is true, but it's only partially true.
Play guitar with him some time. And yeah.
So, I mean, you know, we're still great pals.
I always think of it like John Mayer sings for David Ryan Harris.
Hey, love that.
He's like listening going, what the?
What are you saying?
No, but really, it's like, you know, like your songwriting, man, it's, you know, there's a lot of things I look for in artists. And like, Prince is a big, you know, influence on you. Hendrix is a big influence on me, too. Prince is also a big influence.
Hendrix Gin?
Yes, of course.
Great.
And, of course, like Christina Stevie Wonder. Hendrix, like, we have a lot of the same influences. So when I heard you sing and play, I was like, dude, this guy sounds like Stevie Wonder meets Lenny Kravitz meets Stevie Wonder meets Jimi Hendrix meets, you know, all the good things in music. This is, like, the way every songwriter needs to learn how to do the thing. You know what I mean?
I'm glad that, man. Glad it made you feel
so
that.
Oh, man. Every time I hear you play, there are a few songwriters that I actually go see more than once. And man, every time I see that, if I'm in town and David Ryan Harris is playing, I'm like, dude, I'm there. I got to see.
And you should be too.
That's right. That's true.
You like that radio voice I threw in there? That was more Monster Truck.
Dude. That was nice. A little getting ready for rally.
You're welcome.
Let's get to your next song. What are you going to play us?
I'm going to play a song called So Is Mine. It's a story of a couple whose relationship is over, but they lay in bed every night and pretend that it's not. Oh. Tell me all of the thoughts you're hiding. You lay awake beside me, hoping I'm asleep. 'Cause something's pulling you further from me. Under the waves of these sheets, and I can't help you breathe. So tell me I'm the one thing you keep on your mind. Barely beating, can't keep time. Your heart's in trouble, and so is mine. I wish I could hold you. I know I'm probably supposed to, but there is a wall that we put up between us. I'm too scared to climb. 'Cause something's keeping me from believing there's a forever waiting to be found on the other side. So tell me I'm the one thing you keep on your mind. Barely beating, can't keep time. Your heart's in trouble, and so is mine. Ooh, you have all the answers. I have all the answers, and we're both wrong. So we lie here in silence, 'cause the truth can't be so quiet, but we both know it's barely breathing, can't break through. I'm afraid of letting go, so are you. It's barely breathing, can't keep time. Your heart's in trouble.
trouble, and so is mine. So is mine. So is mine. So is mine.
Holy shit.
That was awesome.
Woo!
Thank you.
He's like, yeah. Are you trying to out-applause me right now?
I like a build. I like a layer.
You're like, you can start with that, but I'll finish it off, Carula.
Dude. I'm just bouncing off you here, man.
What a great song.
That was great.
Is that off your new record?
It is.
Dude, killing song, man. God. It's like I never want the songs to stop. I'm like, dude, make this your Bohemian Rhapsody. Just go 10 minutes, man. It's cool.
I could have put them all together. Put them both together. It's like, guys. It was a weird kind of segue, and I don't think those two songs have anything
to do Prince with it. Didn't Prince do that on a record where it's all on one track?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Dude, old school. Yeah, he put everything on one track, push play.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You got to seek through that shit.
Thanks. Thanks, Prince.
So you've made how many total records?
Follow For Now Solo, Brand New Immortals, six.
Six total?
Yeah. Sure.
And how many?
Maybe seven. I don't know. Six
how many
seven.
Records on Just As David Ryan Harris?
Four.
Damn.
Wow.
Awesome. And when you tell us, you did this last one through crowdfunding. And
I did it through crowdfunding, and any of my people that have crowdfunded that are mad at me because I have not sent out my pledges, I just want you to understand shit is so hard. It's so hard. Like, it's just so hard. Like they should have some sort of infrastructure at those crowdfunding things to tell you like, hey man, if I was you, I probably wouldn't sell 200 CDs that you have to go to the post office and ship out. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it costs $2.30 to ship the CDs, just so you know. So it's just been just trying to figure out how to get everything fulfilled.
Like, I need crowdfunding for post.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
a new Kickstarter.
And I mean, hopefully there's no one listening to this. In another country that is waiting for a CD, because I just found out it costs $9.95 for me to send a CD the cheapest way possible to Australia.
Jeez.
So the people... Mm,
yeah.
About that.
There goes all your profits.
Yeah. Well, I'm doing the math and I'm like, I actually lose money. So I may... It sounds terrible, but I may give those people their money back.
You're like, you can buy the CD.
You can give me $10 more or I'll give you your money back.
Yeah.
You give me more money, or I'll give you all your money back.
People would do that.
I just feel terrible because people are like, hey, you know, I got really emotional. And for me, for people to give me money before they actually heard a thing was really humbling to me. I was like, oh, people really like me.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, these people really believed in me and they put their money where their mouth was. And, you know, I feel indebted to them forever. So I just want to be able to get these things out, but it's just, it's like so
dude,
difficult.
Seriously, postage sucks, dude. Yeah, we need to get back to the Pony Express, man. Oh,
so bad.
We're trying to train some crows.
Yeah.
Let's do this Game of Thrones style.
How many songs did you record total?
11.
Okay.
11.
How long did it take you?
3 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And like, how did you like think about the concept of the whole record?
I mean, I wanted to do a record that... I feel like there's this this sort of pervasive feeling that it's not cool to be happy and look up. Like, it's way cooler to be like a shoegazer or be like, this party sucks. And like, you know, so I wanted a record that was somewhat positive without being preachy. And to also, like, the song Shelter for me is kind of the idea of, you know, people that you always take care of and people that you know are always going to take care of you. And like the idea is kind of this record, like visually is like, we've been in this bunker. We've been in kind of this dark place now. And like, I'm going to like lift the curtains and look outside. Oh, I see a little bit of light. I think we can, you know, I think we can go out and, you know, see the world now. That's what I started with.
Right.
But then I like wrote love songs and, because that's kind of blew it up. Yeah. Kind of what I, you know, like relationship songs and.
Well, you it's your story though. It's like,
right.
I think every songwriter goes to that back to that romantic place. It's
right.
Like you put love on this pedestal. Like, well, there's always a love song I could write. You know, it's like,
man, there's this. Have you seen Imagine, the John Lennon movie?
Yes.
Where that dude shows up at his house.
Yeah.
The like homeless looking guy. Yeah. for those of you out in Radio Land. So this guy, this completely disheveled, looks like he done more acid than, you know, whoever. He shows up at John Lennon's house. Somehow he found his house. And he, I guess he knocks on the door. And I guess somebody that works at John's place was like, hold on.
You don't want to answer that.
Hold on. Let me go get John. I'll be right back. And so John shows up. And you can tell, like, he just woke up. He just put his glasses on. And this guy is like, hey, man. Like, I just had to come, you know, I had to come see you because I felt like you were, like, talking to me in your songs, you know, like you were talking, like telling my story. And John was, he looks at him very matter of fact, and he's like, how could I be talking about you, man? He's like, I can only talk about what I know. Like, I can talk about me, right, and at best, me and Yoko.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, like, you know. So for me, like, these songs are, it's like, it's me. I wish I could write, like, you know, really deep songs like, you know, Black Hole Sun, where people are like, oh, what does it mean?
What's it mean? Oh,
what
God
does it mean? But I can't really. I can't do it.
Well, what are we playing off the record? Let's play something off the record.
This song.
This song's called Black Hole Sun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Black Sun Hole. Well, I'll play this song called The One You Love. It's kind of got a long intro.
How about that for an intro?
I was like, holy shit, that is not my song. That is not, that is not how it goes.
Here it is. The One You Love.
Can I talk over the intro?
Yes.
It's a dark. Oh, it wasn't as long as I thought. David Ryan Harris. The One You Love. He's coming to town. You give me.
Nice, man. Killing tune, man.
Thank you.
Dude, yeah. You had us all just grooving. Everybody was grooving. Yeah. And everybody was just like, digging that shit. I love it. So, David, you just toured Australia.
Mm-hmm.
You went to Melbourne, Sydney. Tell us what that was like.
Australia's become kind of my second home.
My home down under?
Yes. I prefer to call it my land. Land down under. But, you know, home, land, whatever. Live your dreams. Just over the years, for some reason, I had a friend that I went to high school with that was from Sydney. And so I was always kind of fascinated because he had this cool accent, and all the girls thought he was cool because he had this accent. He kind of looked like Michael Hutchins, which probably didn't hurt his chances with the ladies. But like, I always loved Australian music since I was in high school. Like, you know, bands.
NXS, Midnight Oil.
Midnight Oil, this band Hoodoo Gurus, Noise Works.
Men at Work, right?
Yeah. Tons of, you know, bands. It's always been my thing. And then I started writing, I wrote a song called Sweetest Berry that was on my last record.
I love that song. It's one of my favorite songs.
And the artist, Guy Sebastian, who had won Australian Idol, heard that song and wanted to put it on his record. So he put it on his record, and then he came to the States, and we met, and we've written, I think, at least a song on each of his subsequent records, like four
amazing.
Records.
Wow.
So when I quit playing with John, I was like, all right, if I'm not going to do that, then I just want to do everything, because it got to be kind of hard. I couldn't commit to stuff because I wasn't sure if John was going to go out or like what the schedule was like. I couldn't commit to stuff way down the line. So I was like, well, if I'm not going to do that, then I'm going to do
all the things.
I'm going to do everything.
Everything then, in between.
So yeah. Guy was like, hey man, would you like to come and play guitar in my band? And it was like, you know, we're playing songs that I co-wrote. And in addition to that, you would also be support on the tour. So
you're like, shit, let me check.
Yeah. I'll get right back to you.
Throw another shrimp on the barbie.
Yes. And so we played like 55, 56 dates in Australia, which if you know anything about the cities and the topography of the country, it is incredibly difficult to play 55 cities.
You must have played a lot of shows in like the Outback.
We played a lot of Outback steakhouses. There's a lot of blooming onions.
Yeah,
It's my per diem.
Actually, just down there, they're called steakhouses.
You think that's a steakhouse?
No rules, just right. But, you know, I got to travel the country and play all of these, like, you know, kind of smaller tertiary markets and really got to...
That was a good use of tertiary, dude.
I only use it with touring.
No, but you threw it out there like, you tertiary. Know what, I use this all the time.
Tertiary markets.
I hope you don't think this is too tertiary, but...
Just don't ask me to spell it.
Dude, I want you to write a song with tertiary.
We'll play tertiary right after My Prerogative. Because I remember when My Prerogative came out, I was like, there are a bunch of brothers that are looking that word up right now. Like, I don't know what that means. Yeah. I think it sounds like something you do in court.
Like, whatever that is, I want to do it. It's mine.
So, you know, I got to, you know, make a lot of new fans and see all these, like, you know, small markets, and just fell in love with the country even more because we were literally riding around in a van. Like, they don't have like big tour buses in the country. They don't really. So we were in a couple Sprinter vans, and we had this massively huge song called Battle Scars with him and Lupe Fiasco that I kind of co-wrote. So we was kind of riding the wave of that, and it was just an amazing.
Were you that guy on the tour van that was like, well, back in the States, we have these big luxury buses that we usually ride.
Dude,
I don't have the accent. You guys have the accent. Yeah.
I rolled up my sleeves and I drew the line at driving. I was like, I will ride in this van, but I'm not going to drive.
Yes. Yeah. You're like, I've done my time.
I'm not going
to try and go in the reverse of the reverse. It's like,
I'm still driving, David. I'm still driving.
I mean, no. I would do it here. It would just be being on the other side of the road.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I don't need to be that alert. Right.
It's like when Nikki tries to kiss girls.
Easy there, buddy. Oh. All right. I'm going to gong that joke. You're out of here.
Right.
Kisses them on the other side of their face. Upside down.
His bonk noses every time.
We could have a whole, like, you know, like fucking, I don't even know what I'm talking about right now. I was thinking,
but we could.
What are you, blog? We could all have a whole blogosphere about that last
blogosphere.
Joke. You know what I'm talking about.
So yeah, I was just there. I think I'm going back again in March. I'm going to try to teach a songwriting kind of workshop thing.
That's amazing.
Australian Institute of Music. and play some shows.
I'm picturing a bunch of Aborigines with sticks with fucking strings on it. You're like, all right, guys, this is a G chord.
That is incredibly racist.
I didn't mean it just because you're black. I'm just saying.
No,
you're I'm teaching like some small, like,
I'm just kidding.
No, but you know what? They must be like overwhelmed because, like, the talent, do you know Missy Higgins? She's like one of the biggest like, Australian songwriters.
Not a didgeridoo. Interesting.
Well, that's like, that's an Australian instrument, you know? Yeah. It's like,
what if I showed her the first day and I was like, okay, class, look, this is a guitar. This is a guitar.
They're like, this guy's an asshole.
Yeah. I don't know if you have these in your country.
They're like, we're done with this guy. So you have also, like, when I opened up for Dave Matthews Band, mm-hmm. Dave Matthews brought you out mm-hmm. for the encore, and I was just like, I felt like a proud parent. I was like, I know that guy, he's amazing. Dave's bringing around. Like, so you came up with all those guys, like when you were touring, and with like
the Dion Ferris thing. I know what you do. Yeah. We opened for Dave, and this is on Under the Table and Dreaming.
Wow.
So I kind of got to meet them on their way.
Yeah, some great, like on some really great intersections mm-hmm. of careers. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just always stay in touch. If you know when I was living in Atlanta.
And don't be a dick.
Yes, don't be a dick. That'll be the extent of my songwriting workshop thing. It's like, all right, class, I need you guys to all write this down.
Don't
be a dick.
Yeah.
And then I will drop the proverbial mic and leave.
It'll be 350 of your Australian dollars.
Lesson 3: tertiary markets.
Yes.
Well done.
No, so where can people find you online? What's your website?
It's davidryanharris.com. I have some things available on Spotify and things available on iTunes. And initially when I finished this new record, I was like, oh, I'm going to put out 3 EPs digitally. But I've now decided that I just want the whole thing out. So I'm going to put – the record's called Light Years. It's not out yet. Probably be out in – I don't know. I'll give myself 8 weeks. Maybe fewer, but I'll just put the just put the whole thing out.
It's really a gamble.
Yeah. Who knows? Just keep looking every day.
It'll be out in 10 weeks.
Keep hitting a F5 on your on your Internet Explorer.
Keep looking every day. So yeah, it'll be out. It's called Light Years. There's actually an EP on iTunes now called Which Way Home, which has that last song, the one you love, on it.
Awesome. And you play out, I know, like you're a warrior on the road.
Yeah.
So tell us, I know you play Hotel Cafe in Los Angeles a lot.
I play there quite a bit.
Where else do you play?
I'm actually, you know what? Interesting fact. Here's where worlds collide.
I love this.
Someone got slapped.
They collide. Like,
yeah. There we go.
Now there it is.
Yeah. That's where hands and faces
collide. Shit's getting crazy over here. Easy, guys.
Background vocals on that last song were done by Hanson.
Whoa.
Really?
And I'm on my way to Mexico tomorrow to hang out with Hanson. They do this thing for their fans. I think it's called Back to the Island. It's in Cancun, and their fans pay to
get a rough life.
Hanson!
Yeah. You pay to get up close, and, you know, they actually have a really great relationship. They've been really smart about having the personal thing.
They just launched a beer line, like,
last
year.
It is delicious. It is one of my favorite beers.
M-hop.
M-hops.
Really?
Right? Yeah.
That's
yeah.
smart. That's good yeah. marketing.
It is one of my favorite beers. No joke.
Wow.
It's great.
Dark beer? What's it like?
It's like an IPA.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
It's my prerogative, right?
It's like an IPA, but it tastes like the tears of 14-year-old girls.
Oh, my God. So are you touring outside of L.A. anytime soon?
I don't have anything planned right now. To be perfectly honest, I want to put this band together that's like, kind of like Sly and the Family Stone. Like,
nice.
Just like a bunch of people. I played this show at Hotel Cafe in November, and there were like nine people on stage.
That was the shit.
Were you there for the one that John played?
Yep. The Bob Reynolds also played.
Yep. Bob Reynolds and Rashawn Ross with Dave Matthews.
Killer band. It was and then you had these 3 gorgeous background singers.
Right.
And the harmonies were just like, oh my God.
The whole night was just, I had so much fun, and it was just like a magical night. And I realized there can be a lot of power in just having a bunch of people. You know, like when you go see Arcade Fire, it really is just a big, beautiful noise. I don't know who's playing what.
Yeah.
All of that shit could be on track. I have no idea. Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zero, same thing. It's like, I don't know who's doing what. I don't quite want to do that.
Yeah. I know they all need baths.
Right. I know it will be like that, but with soap.
Yeah.
Not cool.
So I want to put together like a thing. Like, the band is my favorite band, of all time. So some kind of hybrid between the band and like Sly and the Family Stone.
Dude, that's why I always have a big band. Mm-hmm. I like getting lost in that. Like, I need both. I need to do the solo acoustic thing mm-hmm. so I have like I can break all the lines and blur anything that I want to do.
Right.
And shade where I want to.
Yeah.
But man, I love being in a big band where you just get lost in that sound. And there's moments where you're like, holy shit, I don't even know what's going to happen right now, but we're all in it, whether we drive off the cliff or not.
I just can't pay all of those people.
It's tough, man.
That's... So, like, we just have to do a band. Like, it's, you know, we split it. Whatever happens, we split it. I'm down with that. And I'll, you know, maybe still have my... I'm not going to quit doing, like, solo stuff.
As long as you drive, man.
The callback.
So, yeah, I'm just going to, you know, a lot of new music. I want to do that. And then also kind of want to do a trio because I love Cream and I want to do some shit that's like that.
Yeah, man.
So
I look forward to hearing every new endeavor of music that you are a part of, man.
I'll tell you this. I won't ever take 3 years to make a record ever again for as long as I live. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. the trio record's going to take 9.
Yeah. Like, it's like, no one cares, dude. Like, 3 years, like, the stuff that you're fretting about, nobody can even hear that shit.
You know what the most important line that somebody told me on, like, a record I did 2 years ago said?
What?
Will not affect sales.
Right.
Every time I was like, what do you think? Do you think we should have strings here? Or we should have harp here? He was like, will not affect sales. I'm like, you're right. Dude. Right. Leave it.
Right.
You don't need anything. Let's move forward. Right. You know what I mean?
But then there's also the thing. It's like, you would be the one person in the world most bummed out if it didn't turn out the way you wanted.
But
like,
it's not yours anymore. It's
every
not
time
yours
you
anymore.
Hear, yeah, but like every time you hear it, you'll be like, oh, these strings on there. Yeah. Damn it. What are you doing?
You can't hold on too long, but you've got to
just build this little explosion.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah.
Well, you have a vision. You have to fulfill the vision.
Right.
That's like the most important.
Here's my, I'll give you some math. I think that it's pretty easy for anybody that's proficient at doing this to get like 90% of the way there.
Yeah.
Right? But you blow your brains out trying to get that last 10%.
Yeah.
But only 10% of the population can even hear the last 10% that you're trying to get.
So maybe
just
less.
Yeah. Just go with the 90.
Yeah.
And get out.
Yes. Yeah. In and out. Dude, that's my philosophy, man. Less is more.
Mm-hmm. I thought your philosophy was in and out, which is cool.
Yeah. Philosophy too. Which is
both culinarily,
I really blew it right there.
And sexually speaking.
Well, David, let's jam on a song of yours that I think is one of the best written songs of all time. I really mean that. It's always we played this song like 10 years ago. Hopefully, I'll remember the chord changes. We'll just swing it. But this song is the song that made me stop in my tracks when I first heard you play. Like 10 or 11 years ago. And yeah, man, why don't you introduce it? I'm going to get my guitar and we'll do this.
We'll do this. This song is called, it's called Strong Enough. And it's kind of the story of what happens when you, you tell somebody that you forgive them, but you don't really forgive them. You just hold it over their heads forever until they leave you. Wow, I don't think I've ever played this like a duo. Like, I mean, it's been a really long time. So let's do this.
Let's do it.
Do I count it off? I'm just going to start.
Go ahead.
I would have given my world to see you deliver the jailer's key. I give you the credit and take what went wrong. I would have given most anything to see your lips move and hear me sing. If you'd open your mouth and spit out my song, love of your forgiven. Suffered for long enough. They're holding their breath and I'm calling their bluff. Cause our love is strong enough. Our love is strong enough. Oh, if there were ever a movie made that outlined my life in some modest way, line for line, note for note, and page by page, I hope that whoever played your part would see my remorseful and heavy heart, that they would all
open their mouth and unyieldingly say, she'd say, lover, you're forgiven. You've suffered for long enough. They're holding their breath and I'm calling their bluff, 'cause our love is strong enough. Our love is strong enough. But instead you held the key over my head and just out of reach till any love that used to be got wasted on the need for me to feel as though I could break free. 'Cause I'm not your asshole, I'm not your thief. I thank the Lord that I finally was relieved. Love, you're forgiven. You suffered for long enough. For they all held their breath, but we couldn't call their bluff. Our love wasn't strong enough. 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 Our love wasn't strong enough.
Ryan Harris, thank you so much for being a guest.
Thanks for having me.
You're such a badass.
That was so great, guys.
Good times.
Well, dude, we'll have to have you back.
I would love to come back.
So next time, more jokes. More music. More sound effects.
Yeah, a few more farts more thrown out.
And we wish you the best in 2015. You are an artist I know deserves the best of the best. So
thank you very much.
Dude, thank you for being a guest.
I've been happy to listen for the last hour. This has been great.
I'm going to leave, and you will go back to David very soon. I'm about to leave.
I get it back. I'll be a little bit sad to put Griffin back on the shelf, but it's all right.
Well, thank you so much for our listeners. Thank you, Ronan, for staying a little bit later tonight. Wake Up Hollywood. We'll see you next week.
Peace.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence. Right here on LA Talk Radio.